Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 157. This is Kevin DeFrango sitting beside me with an equally foamy beer, evidently, is Ken Phillips.
Hi, Kevin. Yeah, I was just making fun of you for your pour there, ending up foaming onto yourself a little bit. But I had a similar experience just now because I kind of poured a little too aggressively and led to a lot of extra foam kicking up there. But, you know, these things will happen. I think I can make it work here. It seems to be like a quick dissolving foam, so that's good.
Yeah, that's always for the better when it doesn't stick around for too long when it's over heady.
Yeah, so
so I always think that beer kind of gets, like, the foam turns into beer sometimes, and it kind of gets a little bit weird.
Yeah, when does
it... If it goes to, foams too much.
If you've ever been impatient, sometimes you can, you know, drink the foam, as it were.
Oh, yes.
And it does sort of turn into beer, but it seems like it's more of a bitterish beer, would you say, the foam.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It would. What is the difference between beer and foam? Really? I mean, they both have bubbles in them.
Yeah, not much. Extra bubbles.
Density, I guess.
Density. Yeah.
Now I'm getting more and more curious about what makes up beer foam. I think I can smell another topic coming.
Yeah, I can't say I've done much research into beer foam.
Like, is it a different, like, part of the beer than what stays liquid?
Well, you do want a certain head when anything comes out of a tap, which is sometimes why they switch to nitro or CO2, especially for darker beers. Tends to give it a different, to me it gives it a little different mouthfeel when they're doing something like that. But I think that no matter what form it takes in a can, it's not intended to do that.
Oh, really?
Like, what happened in my can, for whatever reason, just seems to be extra carbonated. Like, it that was a kind of a consistent problem. Yours might be a poor problem.
Yeah. I'll admit to it. I messed up the pour.
So, I guess my pour didn't go necessarily wrong, but I guess I don't think they intend that. Like, if they do something like Guinness's widget, you know, you're definitely trying to get something particular happening. You know what I mean?
Guinness is like famous for having that, tan sort of foam head to it.
Yeah, and it's supposed to stick around for a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, because I do feel like most beers, for the most part, the head goes away fairly quickly. Like, there's supposed to be something there when it starts to pour, but most of the time it kind of fades.
Yeah, I mean, beer is like the only carbonated beverage that does that, though, right? I mean, like, when you're drinking soda, like, you foam for like a second, and that goes away. It's the only thing, like, you know, that will keep that foam around for a while.
Yeah, I guess so.
Champagne,
I'm sure someone can correct this.
I don't think champagne keeps, like, foam at the top.
No, and I suppose tea doesn't.
Well, tea.
Or coffee.
I mean, I'm talking, like, carbonated beverages, I suppose.
Oh.
Just to try to give it, like, an equal...
Pudding.
Fair shot there, yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
But maybe some kombuchas are carbonated. I don't know. Mushroom tea? No.
Yeah, it could be. Possibly. I think kombuchas. If not, it definitely has some carbonated taste, like, mouthfeel to it.
Yeah, I think there is a bit of carbonation sometimes, but I feel like there's no foam on kombucha either.
No. Of course, it's all pre-done. Like, I haven't had a fresh kombucha ever.
On tap?
On tap kombucha.
Do they come on tap? That would be something else, you know. If you work in an office that has on tap kombucha, that could actually be that already existing.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if that's existing. I'm being too lazy to look it up right now. But it would not surprise me, because I'm not that interested. Like, I guess kombucha's okay. I've had it a few times. I don't hate it, but I don't really like a whole lot of tea either, and I do feel like it's tea-adjacent.
Speaking of things on tap, did you know that those newer places that, some of the places that had beers on tap in the office there, that was part of, like, the perk of having an office that at this location.
Uh-huh.
They, like, lock the taps at 5 or 5:30.
Oh.
What kind of sense does that make? I mean, so you're, like, forced to drink during the day?
Yeah, it seems like a weird time to lock. You know, you would think that if you have a system to lock them, you could set times. And A, it would be after 5:30, I would think. And, I could see trying to make sure that someone doesn't take advantage, someone doesn't get too hammered, like an 8 o'clock cutoff or something like that.
That does leave some room for people to get hammered, though.
5:30 to 8 is kind of a long time. I don't know, 7:30, give it a 2-hour time window. I know that a half hour doesn't do a whole lot, but I mean, I feel like you need to leave it open for some period of time if that's supposed to be one of the perks of working there.
You would think so. I read an article where they talked to a guy who actually worked at one of those offices, and said that people very rarely actually use the beer. It's just sort of like a thing to maybe brag about to your friends or something.
I'm not surprised by that. I mean, even what we're partaking in, this is my whole second beverage of the week on 3 days. So, I mean, it's not like I'm drinking even a beer a day so far this week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it would be weird to drink a beer at work, I think. Although, I did do that at one of my jobs. I mean, sanctioned.
I have consumed adult beverages at my current job. No more than 2, I will say. And that's usual as normal, like, over a longer time period. We don't exactly chug these beers when we're doing these shows, either.
Right. Now, these are, relaxing, enjoying our beers. No, power hours. This is not a, John Gabris podcast. Have you ever heard his Power Hour episodes?
Those things are a mess. I haven't listened to the last couple because it's rough, man. I remember doing Power Hours a couple of times because I know that we did it up at your family's cabin one time.
Yeah.
When I was with my ex-wife, because my ex-wife did it with us.
I think that's the only time I can clearly remember doing one, but it's probably in college.
I did one by myself. My roommates were there in Italy. When we were over in Florence, I decided to do one by myself because I needed to do a bunch of work still anyway.
That's the kind of logic that I feel like my daughter would come up with.
Oh, yeah, well, it's definitely college logic. Well, instead of going out to drink tonight, I'm going to stay in to drink tonight.
Okay, great. And since you have a lot of work to get done, you might as well do a power hour.
Yeah, maybe it was just, maybe I didn't have work to get done, because I did not take work seriously while I was over there. I shouldn't say that. It wasn't that bad, but,
sure, don't want to paint the wrong picture.
I was doing a power hour while in school. There's nothing wrong with this.
Did your mom listen to this podcast?
I don't think Ron and Mitch listen to podcasts, so I think I'm pretty safe.
Okay.
And plus, at this point, they A, know that those types of shenanigans don't happen anymore, and that B, they did happen. Like,
and he turned out okay afterwards, you know, in the greater accounting of things, so...
Yeah.
You can laugh about it's the proverbial, you can laugh about it now situation.
Yeah, you got through it, nothing went materially wrong in any time that, you know, we did these things. I have a job in the profession that I got my degree in, so it's not like it went to waste.
Right.
Well, I was hoping to steer it since I was talking about being in Italy.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
There and doing the power hour, because that's where we started. Yeah. I did not make it through that power hour because I learned an important lesson that power hour, in that you don't want to do high-powered beers.
No, I bet not.
I don't think I was doing anything crazy what I was doing it over there, but I still feel like I had some 6 percenters. There at least 1 6 percenter that I blew through, and like anything over like the Bud Light, like the 4.9% or something like that, you are really inviting problems. Like, you really need to go with like a session kind of, and that is, I mean, Bud. I think Bud Light is a season. Could be considered session beer.
Yeah, to have any real hope of making it through, I think, yeah, you gotta do some kind of session beer thing.
Yeah, because that would be really rough now. So, I mean, I remember that being rough even then. Like, of all the drinking that I did, like, I don't know why it always felt different to do the power hours. Like, and I didn't really do them that frequently. Like, those are the two times. Like, if the cabin... And that one, I definitely remember. I'm not... Oh, you know
it
what?
It's like 5 beers in 1 hour, so... It, I mean...
Yeah, like, you really underestimate how much you're drinking.
Yeah.
I think in that situation.
Just a shot at a time, like, a shot is nothing.
Yeah, you're like, one ounce, whatever, and then you realize...
60 that, shots is not nothing.
Because I forgot, you know what, I remember a third time now, at least. Our one friend had a sign-in sheet. So what you do is that you'd sign your name after every minute.
Wow, that's going to take up a lot of time.
Yeah, basically you're signing your name in between... Like, that is taking up your minute, basically, in between shots. But it gets pretty ugly by the time you get to about the 30th minute, I would say. Like, everyone has a rapid decline in their motor skills.
Well, yeah, I was listening to John Gamers talk about it, and he brought up a good point, which is that, like, he really hates it, like, he's actually at his drunkest moment, like, 2 hours after the the show, like, on the ride home, like, was driving home. And, because you're drinking, like, right up to the end, and your body is, like, still processing it. Like, afterwards, so it's, like, I don't know, man. I'm not sure how to go through all that for a podcast.
Well, like you said, like, it's 5.5 beers, like, to be able to legally drive, you can't have more than 1 beer per hour.
Yeah.
And really, like, it kind of depends upon what kind of a beer. I would imagine if you're dropping a 10%er in an hour.
Like a 16 ounce of a 10%, yeah, it's probably not going to fly.
Yeah, I think you're going to be a little over the limit, but... You know, if you're talking...
Yeah, depending on your body weight, too, I imagine.
Yeah.
So there's factors. But, yeah, it's definitely... a power hour is way above the legal limit.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's why I'm not surprised that and I guess I didn't ever really think about it, but that you're drunker really after the fact. Because, like, yeah, you're basically doing five times the legal limit. Which is pretty rough.
You gotta be feeling bad the next day, I'm thinking. It's been a while since I've had that many beers in one sitting, so I don't like to think about what would happen if I did that.
Well, and it was kind of funny on last night's show with Jeremy, which this one will probably not air quite back-to-back days, but we were talking about how we play day drinking now. Like, I like to be able to drink during the day and then hydrate at night. Like, I'm so old at this point. You know, like, it just always seems like a better option rather than waking up with a hangover.
Okay. That's it.
Yeah.
I've always been particularly fond of, like, day drinking outside. I'm like a festival environment or something like that.
Oh.
That's like my really favorite kind of drinking, I'd say, if I had to kind of categorize it. Which I realize you're not asking me to do, but just, there's something about, like, especially this nice sunny day, you're outside, you have a beer in your hand. I don't know.
I think in general people like to drink outside. Yeah. Like, that definitely is something that I feel like we threatened to do an outside podcast last year and never committed to it. I think we need to do that during the summer months here, even if it's just out on the back deck, to pod and have the beer.
Yeah. I mean, it might affect the sound quality, but we can give it a whirl and see what happens.
There could be. I remember our nephew slept out in our sunroom, and he heard too many frogs from the crypt that's out back. And he said it was too loud out there because of all of the animal noises.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of stuff that that lives out back, since we backed on the nature preserve. There are a lot of critters in them our woods to make some noises.
That's funny, because it just reminded me of when we tried to sleep down at our parents had a place out in the country. We were camping out in a tent down there.
Uh-huh.
And there was these whippoorwills that were going, like, for hours and hours, like, all night. And they're so loud. I mean, the birds that make, you know, it sounds like, whip-a-whoo, it's doing that, like, all night long. It was really pretty annoying. Because there's, like, a car alarm going off or something, you know? Like, you think of nature sounds being, like, very relaxing. And, this was not relaxing at all. I have no idea why they have to make that noise. It's really annoying.
I do think that at some point I kind of like the humming of the frogs. I kind of chuckled that my nephew didn't like it. Like, that to me is a little more of a consistent sound. Like, you can kind of hear it at first, but it kind of gets in tone, and I feel like it's kind of like one of those ones that kind of grows on you as you listen to it, and then you kind of get, like, it's almost a chant that they're doing, and you just kind of fall into that pattern.
The Tibetan throat singing kind of
thing. Yeah.
Or whatever that was. Was that,
I think that was
Tibetan?
What it was called.
Sure. Okay. I would see that as being more relaxing. Definitely better than the whippoorwills. Those things suck. But I feel like people do have, like, frog sounds, like meditation or like water, the frogs in the background, maybe.
Yeah.
That's like a relaxing, you know, sound scape sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, too soon. I guess it wasn't your cousin's thing.
Maybe he's used to it. Those noises are not made in the mountains.
Your nephew?
Sorry. Nephew.
Yes.
since he lives in Colorado, I think that they have completely different outdoor noises than we do.
That's very possible.
And he does not exactly live in a big city. So I'm sure that they get their own version of Nathan Moses, but they're just...
You see, frogs are strange to me. Sometimes dead their ways.
Yeah, since we're a mile high up in Ohio here, we have the same climate.
Oh, boy. So, you know, a while back we were talking about going to Italy when you were at Penn State.
Yes.
People can remember back that far.
It's, yeah, hey, you know, we take a couple of detours on the show if you haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah, our GPS wasn't working there for a minute, but I think we're back on track now. Recently, there's been a lot of news about the coronavirus, and Italy seems to be one of the hotbeds for the activity.
It has finally hit home, so to speak, here. It has definitely been mentioned in the O. I'm not sure how much it's been mentioned in the PA. But I did kind of start to wonder to myself before I even saw this article that they had kind of mentioned an outbreak in Italy. And I was just like, oh man, I was already over there by that time, because the architecture school, if you so choose and if you want to pay for it, which I did, you could go over to study in Florence, Italy for a semester. So, and you do have school, you know, a full coursework to do. I would say that some of it is fairly easy. And some of it's just really cool if you like being over there. Like, Italian history, especially in Florence itself, is fascinating. And just something that, with the last name having to be Italian, it also kind of helps, pull in the interest level.
Have some
for
heritage,
you.
Heritage, yeah. More personal.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's kind of a lot of cool subjects that, to me, were easy to pay attention to. Plus, those classes did not exactly make testing hard. But anyway, getting away from that aspect of things, we started like a regular semester, you know? We were over there 2 weeks into January.
Right, so that when you heard about the... outbreak there. The students or yourself when you were there.
Yeah, I was like, oh, because I want to, you know, since we're recording the beginning of March here, I want to say that, I mean, it's been in the news almost all, the whole year at this point? Or did it really start in February? Like, I haven't really been keeping track, but I would definitely say all of February there's been some talk of the coronavirus.
So, you shared an article this week that showed that they were actually pulling, retrieving the students from Italy that were there for Kent State. They came back to Ohio early.
And I mean, that just, I feel bad for them. Like, you can get your money back, but it's also something that, it's hard to do. Like, you won't really get the chance to live in a foreign country for four and a half months or whatever it is exactly every year, you know, and it's I kind of feel bad for them that, that this is the outcome, but I kind of understand that if something goes bad, Kent State has a large problem on their hands.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, what happens with their grades for that semester? Like, they kind of paid for that credit and put their time in so far. It's like a weird, who's responsible to make that right, I guess?
I guess I don't know how you finish out your class. Like, I guess going back to, like, the Italian history class. Like, how do they teach that course when you get back here? Like, are they going to end up...
How can you pick up where you left off when the professor was, you know...
Well, I can...
the ocean?
Yeah, some... Because some of the classes, like the design classes that we had, the studio class, that was taught by a Kent State professor that came over with us. So there are certain classes, and, like, we had... what... And I would imagine it's... Well, I don't know, since they're more theoretical, maybe they're not doing... structures class anymore. But we had one of our structures teachers over there, so we had to take that course while we were over there. So there were some of the courses were taught by someone that would have come back, I would assume, with the students. Okay. So that they can continue those. But there are a lot of classes, you know, at least a couple of classes, I would say, two or three classes. Oh, yeah, because we had an Italian class, Italian history, and, oh, sugar, I was just, because the Italian was the, did we have a, like, basically, oh, a sightseeing teacher, I think? I'm trying to think of what
like architectural appreciation or something?
Yeah, maybe an architectural appreciation, because we didn't always go out to visit buildings, but she did have some connections to get into stuff for us. Like, we got into restoration of one of the churches in town, was how we spent one of the classes.
That's cool.
So, but, you know,
was
again...
that one where they painted a picture of that Jesus or whatever, like, looking like a very hungry person?
No, and you know, I forgot about this, too. And my friend classmate, Michelle, posted it. There was an art studio that we went to when we were over in Florence. And this guy has evidently trained a lot of well-known artists in his time now. And it was cool to have kind of somewhat personal classes with him.
Okay. Yeah, so other news affecting Ohio, I suppose. We just got word that... they were severely limiting the Arnold Classic, which is a big event here in Columbus locally. But since it was like taking place indoors in a kind of enclosed space, they thought it didn't really make sense that people were going to be coming from all over the world to kind of expose people to that kind of risk of getting some type of contagious virus and coronavirus, I suppose, in particular.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Just because of what's being chosen to be shut down and what isn't. Like, because last week I went to a hockey game. So, you know, that was all cool in the game. I have a wrestling event tomorrow that is... listed NXT, which is being recorded currently. I am going to be headed to live tomorrow. And the wife was wondering if they were shutting it down since they are not allowing anyone in the into the Arnold Classic.
Well, it was a you know weird because they are going to allow like the main kind of bodybuilding. Competition, kind of the headline of the event, to go forward. And the reason that they used, that I read in the article, said that it was nothing, you know, it was similar to like a basketball game. So I guess those kind of events are allowed to go on, maybe because they're like a limited time period. whereas like having that, you know, event hall open for like days at a time with like so many people in there. Is a different kind of recipe.
Yeah, it seems like the amount of people is one of the paramount concerns. And they said that they have, was it 500,000 some odd visitors?
I didn't see that number, but that sounds about right.
I'm trying to remember what they said. We listened to the local news before doing the show, and so I don't have a number in front of me. But there is a lot of people that come, and I mean, like you said, like, I guess it's easy to check the athletes, too, for the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't check all of the fans. Like, that's just not an option.
Right. That would be, too many people. So, I don't know how many people were going to come, but the article did say it was a $53 million economic impact for the area. Like, I guess that was including, spending money at restaurants and things like that.
I mean, it's not surprising. It gets crazy down there.
For sure.
And it really has become, like, the NXT event that I'm going to tomorrow, that's in conjunction with the Arnold Classic.
Mm.
So they don't really do anything at the Arnold anymore. Or maybe they keep people around to do, like, autograph signings and things of that nature.
Yeah.
but they don't really do anything directly in the event now. But, again, it does happen the same weekend. Like, that's why it's always the Thursday of the Arnold, like, the first day of the Arnold Classic. So, if I'm not mistaken, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And Sunday. But I think it's a four-day event.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people, you read articles of, how dangerous is the coronavirus. It seems like it may not be, it seems like it might be more deadly than the flu, but the number could go down, like, as far as it's, like, kind of, the lethal rate of it could go down because it's probably something like, people are sick with it, and they're not seriously sick with it. They don't even report that they're sick with it. And so, like, they're missing out on all these cases where nobody died, and they're actually fine. And it just was never reported.
Yeah.
You know, is that making any sense?
Yeah, well, the wife works at a hospital, and they are obviously very aware of the situation. And she's basically, like, people need to chill out, is generally what the main thrust of their policy is currently.
And wash your hands.
And wash your hands.
Yeah.
Don't be dirty ass. And wash your hands.
Mm-hmm.
But, for the most part, there isn't a whole, especially, the people that are dying have tended to be older, and their immune system is not as good.
Right.
Which is, very similar to the flu.
Yeah.
People die of the flu every year, but people aren't freaking out about it either.
Right.
And there's not a news article about it hitting my phone every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of had a wait-and-see approach for a little while. It just seems like it is, like, the sort of thing where probably fine if you're not, like, already immune-compromised or, older, or you're very young, probably, as well. If they've got it, it would probably be bad. But,
right.
It's, I guess, try to take care of anybody who is in that kind of situation. Try to make sure that they're not infected with anything. Also, apparently don't wear masks. People have been doing... buying up hand sanitizer and new quantities.
Yeah, if people are... our roommate was worried about whether we'd be able to find toilet paper or not, because people had been stockpiling on essentials like that, too. Yeah, people are a little bonkers.
There's enough people who are a little bonkers, I think. Cause some trouble sometimes. But
yeah,
Kevin, we also, I think, can note the passing of someone who we did not know in life. I would say it's fair to say.
No, did not know him one
but
bit.
Their work did touch us in at least 8 bits. If you see what I did there.
I do see what you did there.
We're talking, of course, everyone knows, we're talking about the inventor of the Konami code, or the creator of it. Can you invent it, or the creator code?
The article says creator, so we can roll with that.
It also, the first paragraph says inventor. So, we're not going to settle this one tonight, but,
yeah.
People probably familiar with the up, up, down, down, left, right, CTA starts. Or select start, if you want to get that second player in there on Contra.
Yeah.
But it was called the Konami Code because it worked on most of the Konami games. And it made sense because the man worked for Konami, who first came up with this game.
His name was Kazushi Hashimoto is his name, and this was one that I guess I did not realize that it was a platform-wide cheat code. Like, I just remember it for Contra, and I guess I thought it was a Contra-only thing.
That to me was the context in which I learned it, and the one in which I used it the most. I think I was aware that it could be used on other games sometimes, but I had not played Gradius, which apparently was the first game that was in use on, and it was also kind of funny to read the reason that he put it in, because he wasn't good enough at the game to actually beat it, to get to see the later levels. And he needed to be able to test out all the levels. So, to get around it, he put this code into the game that would give him, like, all the power-ups and Gradius to be able to get through the game. And I don't know if it was intentional or not. And this article doesn't really say, either way. But the code ended up making its way into the game. And probably became famous from Nintendo Power, printed in there or something like that.
Oh, yeah, because I know that we did not discover this.
No, it was something that we heard from somebody else.
Yeah, I don't remember if it... I would assume that it was a Nintendo Power that pointed this out.
Yeah, it's interesting how things spread before the internet. But somehow there were things...
Print, damn it.
There were things that, like, everybody knew for some reason. Like, Rod Stewart, like... Them having to pump his stomach with, like, semen. Wasn't that, like...
No, but that was false.
It was, but, like, why does everybody, like... How did that rumor spread around before, like, the internet?
There was always the Richard Gere had a gerbil stuck up his butt.
Right, that's what it was.
Yeah, but everyone knew that, but it did happen before the internet. Word of mouth has always happened from the dawn of time.
It is strange to think that it could have passed, like, coast to coast like that. I mean, I guess we had, like, radios and probably got printed in,
television,
like, some magazine sometime or something like that.
Someone made a joke on, you know, maybe Johnny Carson, Jay Leno, David Letterman.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is starting to make a little more sense now. It could have been...
Possibly Conan O'Brien. I mean, Conan O'Brien's been around long enough that... He could definitely be in on that conversation.
Yeah, he's been around for a while, this one. Since, like, 92, I would say?
Yeah, I think I listen to his podcast now. I don't really watch his shows, but I want to say that he said 26 years in the business, which would be 94.
Oh, okay, yeah. That checks out. I'll go along with that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's a long-ass time still. You know, especially when you're that kind of sustained success. Honestly.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty good. And apparently his podcast is going pretty well, so.
Yeah, it's, well, he's just funny, you know? I guess it does kind of make me miss watching the show. Just because I guess I did always like his comedy. But late night shows in general, just because, and again, another old person thing, like, I didn't stay up for them, so I don't think about taping them sometimes.
Right.
You know, I kind of feel bad about that, too. Like, Adult Swim, I don't pay nearly as much attention to it as I used to. Just because I don't think about it, because I'm not really up that late most of the time. I know I have Attack on Titan set to record.
I was going to say, I keep an eye out for when the next season of Attack on Titan is coming, but, yeah. Well, I've been watching Dragon Ball Kai as well, so.
Yeah, I was watching Dragon Ball Super for a while. And then I think when we moved, I lost track of it.
Yeah.
Which obviously was a while ago at this juncture. But, you know, I do think I lost it that long ago.
Yeah, it's that show has taken a winding road. Although the new manga, like, they stopped the show, but they're still making the manga in Japan.
Oh, wow.
Like, new episodes. And okay. It's, they're on this, like, it's called the Galactic Patrol Prisoner arc. And, like, this, this guy, Moro, some Planet Eater Moro, down here they're kind of fighting against.
Yeah,
but he's, like, able to, like, instantly drain their powers, so it's kind of, like, they're, struggling to kind of come up with a way to defeat him, apparently, at this point.
You know, yeah, you always got to have some struggle.
Yeah, it seems like people feel like it's a return to more of the classic Dragon Ball Z kind of arc feel, as opposed to what Super kind of had been.
Yeah, I guess Super was kind of weird. In some, like, not in a bad way, but I can see how you'd not think that was kind of a classic. Because it really wasn't a bad guy a lot of the time.
Yeah, it felt a lot lower stakes, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, Beerus was certainly not, you know, he was a source of danger, I would say.
Yeah, they always gave him, I can blow my lid at any time. Mm-hmm. But in general, he didn't really need to whoop anyone's ass. Like, every now and again, he's like, okay, fine. If I need to remind you, I will.
He did destroy the odd planet or two here and there. But he was never, like, malevolent about it. You're right. It was, like, more of a sort of, like, well, I am a god of destruction. What do you expect?
I just got to destroy some shit every now and again here, guys. Like, I'm holding back as best I can.
Like, I'm not really taking pleasure out of this, but... It's kind of my whole thing here.
This is my shit.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was different. So I would be kind of interested to see them turn these into, an anime series eventually.
Oh.
So that could be kind of fun.
Gotcha. Yep, and of course, Konami Cheat Code. Is how we got there.
Yeah, I feel like there's no way to beat the game Contra without using the Konami cheat code. I know there's probably video of people beating their game without using the Konami cheat code. I could probably pull up and look at it if I wanted to, but I still refuse to believe that it's possible.
Yeah, you'd have to be really good. Like, I could see, just because of what we've seen with different people specializing in games, I would not be, well, I would be more surprised if there wasn't some type of a record for A, timing, and B, not taking the 30 lives. But yeah, personally, I definitely was never good enough.
And I played that game a lot. And I was good enough, like, I felt accomplished to beat it with the cheat code, really. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of got to the point where I didn't really need all of the mods. Because I think it normally started with 5, if I'm correct. Mm.
Maybe you could up it to 5, but I think you start at 3. Maybe there's like, oh. It might be one of those ones where you could change the settings on it. I'm not sure. But, yeah.
Yeah, like, I feel like it got to the point where maybe I could just do 10 deaths or something within it. So, like, I didn't need it to... Because I feel like I did try to get to the point where I was trying to beat it with less kills,
yeah.
Of myself along the way. But I do feel like it would have been tough slash nearly impossible to, do it with the regular amount of lives.
Well, Kevin, on this earth, we only have one life. As far as I know, and some people, people choose to spend it in different ways.
I am glad our passion at the current moment is podcasting.
Yep.
It is a lot safer than rocket making.
Yeah, building your own rockets has to be one of the most, if not the most, dangerous occupation. Like, that's got to be worse than king crab fishermen. Or garbage men?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you're not trying to launch yourself in the rocket, I think that kind of helps.
I should have specified, yeah.
Yeah, the amateur rocketeers out there, I'm not really going to give them a hard time, although you are asking for trouble with something going wrong with the rocket. And it blows up when it's not supposed to.
This is a bit of a follow-up to an earlier topic that we talked about with our flat Earth, one of our flat Earth topics. There was a gentleman, Mad Mike Hughes, who we had covered before. He was trying to...
I guess I did not realize that we had covered this guy in particular previously. Like, I know that we've done the flat Earth thing at least a couple of times.
Yeah, we had talked about this guy, and he had attempted this once before, but then called it off the day of. This time, he actually went through the launch, and it was a steam-powered rocket, which is interesting. I guess to be safer, although there's really no way around it. Like, you need a lot of energy to launch yourself and a rocket. High into the air. So, like, any way you're providing the energy is going to be dangerous, I think.
Yeah, and you kind of underestimate sometimes. I remember watching a Mythbusters in which I always feel like, I remember it from an old Calvin and Hobbes comic strip in which he was floating through the atmosphere on balloons. And I feel like they've done it in Bugs Bunny and other such cartoons, where a character floats away with a large knot of balloons, and, you get away from that pesky Wile E. Coyote or some other villain, and... they tried to recreate someone using a lawn chair and having balloons attached to it, and it was a massive amount of balloons that you needed to attach to that to get yourself to raise up, and to actually fly any type of distance. So I guess that puts into perspective how much energy you need to get into air, even if it's just like you and a very small aircraft. Like in this case, it was just a lawn chair and a person. Like if you add any type of, weight to any situation, you've got to deal with it in one way or another. Whether it's brakes in a car, buoyancy in a boat, there's always some type of countermeasure that goes on to stop the mass that you're dealing with.
Yeah, you're talking about this idea of a runaway balloon, or a balloon sort of floating away on a balloon. It reminded me of the first Daniel Craig movie I ever saw. and I had to look it up because I couldn't remember what it was called. But it's Enduring Love, and it's a strange title because, as I recall, the plot is about a balloon accident where there's like a gust of wind or something, and someone is trying to like grab onto the balloon, and they end up carried away with it high into the air, and they aren't able to like get down or get into the basket, and they fall from it and are killed. And it's kind of like their like the fallout from that incident.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, is it 2 hours of someone dangling from a damn balloon only to fall and just be complete? Well, I'm not sure if it's treating the fallout afterwards. I feel like now you're heading into cliffhanger territory there.
Or balloon hanger.
Balloon hanger.
Yeah, I mean, it's, it left an impact on me. And, the first time I watched it, I was really a big fan of Daniel Craig, and I was like, oh, whatever, I don't know. I wasn't that, impressed, but apparently, they were onto something, because he's went on to make a few movies after that.
Yeah, he's done okay for himself.
Yeah.
He does, I'm sure he'll do a little bit of business at the box office again as James Bond.
I also liked him in Knives Out. I don't know if you saw that movie.
Yes. Enjoyed that very much.
It's been a while since I've seen like a good old-fashioned whodunit kind of movie. You know?
Yes. Anything that evokes Clue, I am 100% in on.
You know, I hate to say this, but I think I liked Knives Out a little bit better, even though, just because... Like, they did a kind of similar idea where they're, like, showing you, like, different scenes or, like, you're seeing more of things. Like, they did that in Clue. But the thing I didn't like about Clue is when it was, like, the different things that would, like, contradict what had already happened. Like, the kind of different endings. Like, just, like, I don't know. Like, in Knives Out, like, you would get more details about what happened. But it might, like, totally change the meaning of what you thought happened, but it doesn't, like, change the facts of what happened. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there was definitely a more sound logic to that.
Yeah.
But I also think that Clue was trying to be more of a comedy.
More zany, yeah.
Yeah, and more zany than Knives Out was trying to be, too. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, there are a couple of differences. I think maybe you let story consistencies, you let those slide a little bit more when you're just maybe trying to go for the jokes. But it does maybe bring it down some.
Yeah, I still remember quite enjoying that movie. It's been a while since I watched it, though.
Yeah, like that's one that every time I think it to myself, I'm like, man, I should really watch that again, and I still haven't watched it again. Because it's been years, but it was definitely one of those ones that I've rewatched a lot.
I would say in that category is Three Amigos for me. I haven't watched that one for a long time, but I can remember like really watching that a lot back in the day.
I was a fan, but I can't say that I watched that one a lot. I know that I probably rewatched it a couple of times. But I can't say that was on the heavy rewatch category.
I can't remember if I'm making this up or not, but I believe I saw they were talking about doing a reboot of the Three Amigos at some point.
I do feel like I've seen that rumor thrown out there. Keep an eye on that, I suppose. Because I think, is The Rock still slated to do...
Black Adam?
Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, really? I don't know. I don't think I saw that. But that's a pretty good idea, I think. I mean, that sounds like a good move for The Rock. You know, Kurt Russell, also a man with a lot of charisma, I think he pulled off that role. I think The Rock could do well with that one, too.
Well, it would definitely, to me, be a different role for The Rock. Because... I didn't realize it, and that is one of the movies that I've weirdly rewatched somewhat recently, is that Kurt Russell is a real buffoon in that movie.
Right.
Like, it is definitely not the typical Rock part.
Yeah, I mean, because, the other guy, the Asian fellow in there, was, I think, originally supposed to be, like, the hero of the movie.
Oh.
But for whatever reason, it focuses more on Kurt Russell, who, you know, you may think is, like, a cool guy when you're watching as a kid, but you're right. Like, when you look at it when you're older, you're like, this guy's, like, kind of a loser.
Yeah, you see how overblown he is about the, all the situations they're getting into, and he kind of gets out of most of this stuff by pretty much sheer luck. While his partner in crime, and I'm trying to think...
Or his partner bails him out, basically.
Or the partner bails him out. I can't think of what his name is. Well, I can't think of either of their names, so no. I guess I don't feel too bad.
Yeah,
so I like it was Jack. Something.
That's what I was going to say. I think it was Jack.
Was it Wang? Or was that the extra guy that helped guide them to the secret lair?
That, I think I know the guy you're talking about. Because he was like in several of those movies at that time. Okay. Wang, you're right. His name was Wang, Kevin. Bonus points to you.
Okay, nice.
And Egg Shen was the wise...
Egg Shen, yeah. Just call him Egg.
Yeah. Jack Burton was Kurt Russell. And let's see, you remember Kim Cattrall's name in that movie?
Oh, no, I don't.
Gracie Lai.
Oh.
Gracie Lau, the investigative reporter.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't drag that out. The listeners did not need to hear me guess bad things. Because I wasn't coming up with that one.
And I think Peter Kwong is the guy who... No. James... Which guy exploded?
Peter Kwong. Rain.
Peter Kwong, I thought so too.
Yeah. Rain was the one that ended up... Those special effects were pretty trash.
I mean, it was super cool back when it came out.
Like, some of those, I do feel like, in general, practical special effects have aged better than some of the early digital special effects. Because, like, I still feel like this, obviously the stuff in Star Wars is not as high-tech as some of the stuff, but... Because they built so many of those models and shot things that way, I think it looked better.
Yeah.
than some of the first CGI stuff looks.
Do you remember
trash,
watching? Do you remember the last Starfighter? Remember the last Starfighter?
Yeah.
We watched that. I made my family watch that at a recent movie night here, and I mean, some parts of it were still pretty good. But it was a movie where there was, like, one of the first movies that they used computer-generated graphics on. And some of them are pretty bad, but other limits were kind of funny. Like, he uses this, like, gun sight to, you know, control the turret of the starfighter. Like, his partner or whatever is driving the ship, and he's the one shooting.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be, like, a... You know, kind of like a holographic display, like, where it's kind of clear air through there, but there's a screen, like a heads-up display that shows him, like, the sights and, like, where the ships are and things.
Yeah.
But they, I feel like they couldn't really do that, like, they couldn't, like, superimpose computer graphics onto a scene with people in it. Like, they could only do, like, either all computer graphics or, like...
Yeah, or all practical.
Practical. And so, like, they're like, oh, it's suspended in a hydrogen plasma mist, so you can't see it unless you're, like, looking at it straight on. So, like, for all the shots where they're showing him, like, this site is just, like, empty with nothing in it.
Yeah.
And he's, like, turning and shooting stuff, and then it'll, like, show you, like, from his perspective, supposedly, and you'll be able to, like, see, like, a Tron-looking stuff happening on the screen.
Oh, yeah.
It was not as good as I hoped. Although, I did have fond memories of that movie.
Yeah, that's another one I guess I don't have terribly fond memories of, honestly. Like, I definitely remember watching it, but it wasn't up there on my list.
Yeah. I think the premise being, you know, a video game that was created in order to find an actual starfighter to fight in an intergalactic, you know, battle somehow spoke to me as a young, nerdy video game player.
Man, that kind of, now that you say it that way, because I definitely didn't remember the plot, it sounds like the Orson Scott Card Ender books.
Yeah.
Like, you're trying to find that perfect person to lead your army.
It reminded me a little, at the time, it reminded me a little, and that's true, it reminded me a little of Ready Player One, where there was, like, a game that you play in order to, like, kind of be found worthy to, you know, get some, you know, in this case, it was to be a starfighter.
Oh, right.
Or to, like, control the biggest corporation in the world for the Ready Player One example.
Oh.
I could see, I guess, either way.
Yeah, I still didn't see Ready Player One. I did keep on chuckling that he's supposed to start in Columbus, Ohio, if I'm not mistaken.
You should see it. It's a good movie. I mean, it's not like, I don't know. It's just a good movie.
Yeah, I feel like it got a fair to Midlands review, you know, where I shouldn't expect complete garbage, but I'm not going to, like, be singing its praises.
I don't want to hype it up too much. But
by the time I'm done with it.
It's a good movie. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Well,
we did not end up talking about Mad Mike Pete Hughes at all.
Oh, yeah. The guy...
We went on a massive detour that time.
A detour of epic proportions. we did talk about him in an earlier episode. He's a flat earther, and he wanted to prove for himself. And I guess he put his own life on the line, but it didn't work out well.
Yeah, unfortunately, gravity won.
He was trying to launch himself up there in order to see or not see the curvature of the Earth. And I'm not sure how high you have to be up there to see the curvature of the Earth, but I feel like it's probably higher than what he was able to get from this rocket.
He did not get very far. The rocket misfired. It started with the whole Mythbusters tangent. But, he fired himself in a rocket to be able to see the curvature or non-curvature of the Earth. I mean, that's one of those things that they're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, it's,
You know, like, at some point with flat earthers, like, someone within that community is going to get a chance to see for themselves that the Earth isn't flat. Like, even if it's not by a self-propelled...
There was a Netflix documentary about flat earthers, and I don't remember what it was called, but it was... It, at times, infuriated me, because it seemed to almost be taking the side of the flat earthers, but I think it was more or less... It was more like not being, like, the rights of them, but...
Oh.
Kind of, hearing them out, I suppose. But the ending, spoiler alert, I suppose, for a documentary. there are kind of flat earthers confronted with basically their own experimental evidence that shows that the Earth is round.
Oh.
And, people can find ways to
still
to justify anything,
Yeah, it's so bonkers. Like
it's like some like super sensitive gyroscope that could detect at it stays still as the Earth moves under it basically, so they could like detect the tilt versus like where it started. It would stay kind of stationary as the Earth's rotating around is the idea. So it could like detect the subtle movement of the Earth. And it was detecting it. And then I think that was one example. And then some of the people felt like the electronics in it had been like tampered with by the government cabal in order to produce this effect.
Of course.
So it's,
Yeah, so it's a conspiracy on top of a conspiracy.
Yeah.
To disprove their own information. Good Lord. Yeah.
So this is kind of, in a way, a sad topic, but a lesson, perhaps, for somebody out there. Don't do this.
Do not launch yourself in a homemade rocket. Like, I don't care how good you are at the whole rocket thing. Like, it just seems like an unadvisable idea.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like you need to have someone with some really deep pockets involved to be doing this whole experiment type thing.
If you're really dead set on this thing, like, maybe look into a balloon? I don't know. It seems like it'd be safer. I'm not saying do it. But,
yeah.
Think about other options besides a rocket that you make yourself.
Yeah, I would think that a hot air balloon could get high enough to prove curvature of the Earth.
I remember that guy who did that jump from that balloon. I think that was like a helium balloon or something.
Oh.
That was like the highest altitude jump ever.
Yeah.
It seemed like he was up there pretty high. Although, I'm not sure everybody wants to, you know, go through that parachute jump.
Yeah, because I think that he was to the point where the earth was, there, the air was completely thinned out.
He was in a space suit, yeah.
Yeah, he was in a space suit. Like, I don't think you need to be up quite that high to prove curvature of the earth.
But you could in a balloon, I guess, so. That would be better than a rocket, is all I'm saying.
Well, Ken, as usual, I suppose we can wrap up this year's show with a little talk about some beer.
Yeah.
I have reviewed Little Champ by Sideswipe Brewing, their hazy, most recent hazy IPA. What say you about it, since I've already said my 2 cents on it?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to give it be able to give it an impartial review, because I am kind of recovering from the cold a little bit. My taste buds are maybe not where they should be, but something about the aftertaste wasn't necessarily my favorite. I did finish the beer.
I do feel like they've made better hazy IPAs. I do like that one. But the Bro Haze Bro that they made last year is kind of one of my favorites. So I'm going to default to that one. It is better. But I still do like Little Champ. I feel like it kind of had a pineapple-y flavor, if I remember correctly.
Something about it reminded me of that, like a Nightfall flavor. And Nightfall is like my least favorite thing in the world. So, my least favorite taste in the world, let's say.
I guess it still reminds me of Jägermeister, so I've never really had a problem with the Nightfall taste. Weirdly enough. But I guess I didn't take it that much either. So, like, I never took it enough that I guess it did always have a funky taste when we were young.
I know,
like, but I guess I embrace it now.
I know when I have to take it, like, to be able to sleep through the night, but it's very, like, reluctantly, I will take it, because it's just, like, it's just a terrible taste. this beer was not that bad, let me just be clear, but there was something that reminded me a little bit about it that was not sitting well with me. Maybe it's just because I had to have Michael recently. It's kind of fresh in my mind for some reason.
Gotcha. I had the Seventh Son beer, Fox and the Stout, which was made in conjunction with Fox and the Snow, which is a fantastic pastry location and limited sandwich option.
They got a great egg sandwich there. It hasn't checked that out.
I did not try that. I've tried. Well, their coffee cake was outstanding.
Yeah.
And I tried something else there. I've only been a couple of times, so I can't completely rate it. But they did this beer in conjunction with them. And A, we have a number of them left. And B, I just found out that the White Flakes, the Seventh Son staple, Imperial style Oubliette better than Proxima style. So I have a couple of these to get to. So it's probably going to get reviewed or at least talked about on a couple of podcasts here. Which is fine by me. I think it's a pretty fantastic beer. It's kind of a s'moresy style Imperial stout.
Well, that sounds good.
Which is why it was kind of surprising that she didn't like it. She loves the Imperial stouts. And the fact that she was not that much of a fan of this one was a little surprising, in my opinion. But to me, if they come out with it again, so I'm going to say that I got this in late fall. If they come out with it again in fall, I would suggest picking it up, in my opinion. Or at least going there to give it a whirl.
Give it a sample.
Yeah, so I'm at Frango11, that's at Goji32, the brand is at Stuntbrain. Great reviewers on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us, and have a good night.
See ya.